Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. It's your girl, Holly, and I am back today with another solved murder case for you all. Before we get into all the details of today's case, I do have not one, but 2 Patreon members to shout out to this week. A major thank you to Vicky and Cindy for signing up for my little amazing true crime family. Every time a new subscriber signs up, I get so excited. I tell the entire family and I give a little whoop whoop. So thank you both for making my week extra amazing. It just so happens to be my birthday week, so that was an amazing gift to give to me this week. So major, major thank you. If you want to be like Cindy and Vicky and join my super amazing little true crime fam, you can do so at www.patreon.com/crimewithholly and sign up for just $2 a month. Or you can visit the link in the description of this episode. I also wanted to give you guys a case update. On May 13th, what would have been Eric Richens' 44th birthday, his wife Corey Richens was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. I know her attorneys are already working on an appeal, so I know this is not the end for the Corey Richens saga, but it is one step closer. Okay, so with all of that said, let's get into the details of today's case. Today's episode is on the murder of Paige Bergfeld. Paige Bergfeld was originally from Denver, and from everything I found, Paige was just the type of person that people naturally gravitated towards. She was incredibly loving, affectionate, and very family-oriented. She absolutely loved hosting family gatherings and having everyone together. And long before she ever had children of her own, Paige already knew that motherhood was something she deeply wanted in life. Those who knew her before she had children knew that when that time came, Paige would be an incredible mother who doted on her kids and would completely embrace motherhood. It truly seemed like being a mom was something Paige felt called to do. After graduating high school, Paige moved to Florida, where she attended the University of Florida on a scholarship while pursuing a degree in nursing. According to an episode of 2020, Paige's high school sweetheart, a man named Ron Beigler, followed her out there. But over time, it appeared that Paige's grades were slipping, and eventually she made the decision to leave college altogether. After dropping out, Paige and Ron moved back to Colorado, where the couple got married and officially started building a life together. But apparently the couple failed to have a big, serious conversation prior to marriage. It seems like they never spoke about the future or whether they wanted to start a family. While Paige desperately wanted children, Ron, on the other hand, reportedly had no desire to become a father. And for Paige, that wasn't something that she could compromise on. Motherhood was incredibly important to her, and she knew she couldn't stay in a marriage where the future she wanted simply didn't exist. So after 2 years of marriage, the couple divorced in 1997. Now, according to an article published on Medium.com, instead of returning to school to continue nursing, Paige began working at a strip club. And Paige was absolutely beautiful, which helped her become very successful in that profession. She was making great money, paying all of her bills comfortably, and still had plenty of money left over. But more than that, the club introduced her to a completely different social circle filled with some very wealthy and influential people. And it was there that Paige met Rob Dixon. Rob was an emergency medical technician and entrepreneur, but he also came from a very wealthy family who made their fortune during the early days of cell phone technology. So technically, Rob didn't really have to work because much of his lavish lifestyle was funded through the family's wealth. And lavish truly is the best word to describe the kind of life Rob was living at that time. Rob reportedly owned 6 different sports cars, but the one people seem to remember the most was his bright yellow Ferrari that definitely turned heads everywhere it went. And when Rob and Paige Bergfeld began dating, Paige was showered with expensive gifts. We're talking more than just a dozen roses. We're talking diamond bracelets, luxury items, and even a diamond necklace that reportedly was worth around $12,000. Then when Rob eventually proposed, he did so with an engagement ring that reportedly cost a staggering $85,000. After getting married, the newlyweds settled into a beautiful home in Grand Junction, and finally, Paige seemed to have the life that she had always dreamed of. One thing Paige absolutely loved about Rob was that, unlike her first husband, Rob was just as eager to start a family as she was, so the couple wasted no time. They welcomed a daughter named Jess into the world, followed by 2 sons, Taft and Trigger. And from the outside looking in, they truly appeared to have the picture-perfect life. Beautiful home, expensive cars, a growing family, and financial security. But unfortunately, that picture-perfect image wouldn't last forever. According to the 2020 special on Paige, her father later stated that Rob began making a series of poor investment decisions, and those financial mistakes reportedly created an enormous amount of stress in Rob's life, stress that slowly began trickling over into their marriage. Soon, Rob was allegedly struggling financially and having trouble paying the mortgage on their large home. The pressure inside the house was building, and things between the couple became increasingly volatile. Then, one evening in 2004, Paige made a terrifying call to 911. During the call, Paige told the dispatcher that she and Rob had been fighting and that Rob was supposed to stay home and watch the children while she went to work. But according to Paige, Rob allegedly threatened that if she left, she would come home to find all of the children murdered. Authorities became involved, but that particular incident ultimately did not result in criminal charges against Rob. But just 1 year later, things inside the Dixon home would reportedly escalate yet again. During another argument between the couple, the situation allegedly turned physical. Rob was arrested for third-degree assault after reportedly slapping and punching Paige multiple times during the altercation. Sources also stated that Paige was holding their youngest child, who was still a toddler at the time when the assault allegedly occurred. And according to multiple reports, the argument may have started because Paige had decided to return to work in the adult entertainment industry in order to help make up for the financial losses the family was experiencing. This was something that deeply upset Rob. After the case went to court, Rob pleaded guilty to the charges despite continuing to claim that he never struck Paige. He was sentenced to attend a mandatory anger management program. After the assault case, Rob and his attorney maintained that Paige had fabricated both allegations against him. They claimed that Paige made up the story about Rob threatening to kill the children, as well as the accusations that he physically assaulted her, and they believed that she was trying to secure an advantage in a future custody battle if there ever was one. But by 2006, the marriage between Rob and Paige had officially fallen apart, and the couple finalized their divorce. And honestly, by that point, Rob's life seemed to be unraveling in multiple different ways. Prior to the divorce, Rob had reportedly hit financial rock bottom and eventually filed for bankruptcy. According to reports, his reputation around Grand Junction had also taken a major hit after he was unable to pay for equipment that he had leased and then donated to first responders. So in the eyes of many people within the community, Rob had gone from being this wealthy, successful businessman to someone they viewed as dishonest and fraudulent. And apparently, people within the town became very negative towards him. Meanwhile, after the divorce, Paige was left trying to figure out how she was going to financially support herself and her three children on her own. Friends of Paige later shared during the 2020 special that Paige was deeply concerned about the children being around Rob. In fact, Paige even wrote in a blog post in March of 2007 that her children had asked her whether their father was going to kill her. And in another incredibly chilling statement, Paige wrote that she couldn't even imagine what life would be like for her children after he killed her. Now, whether those fears were justified or not, those statements become extremely haunting considering everything that would later happen. Eventually, with his reputation in Grand Junction essentially destroyed, Rob packed up what was left of his life and moved to Philadelphia, leaving Paige and the children behind in Colorado. And with Rob gone, Paige had to get creative when it came to supporting her family. She started a business teaching dance classes to children throughout Grand Junction, and from everything I found, this honestly seemed perfect for Paige. She loved children, she loved creativity, and she really poured herself into it. She even organized recitals for the kids and personally made all of their costumes herself. But teaching dance wasn't the only thing Paige was doing to bring money in. She also became involved with the Pampered Chef, which for those unfamiliar, it is a multi-level marketing company founded in 1980 that sells kitchen tools, cookbooks, food products, and other cooking-related items. And honestly, I feel like almost everyone knows someone who has hosted one of these parties at some point. I know personally my own kitchen has plenty of products that probably came from friends hosting these events over the years. The appeal of these MLM-style businesses for women, especially stay-at-home moms, is the flexibility of it all. You can essentially run your business from home using your phone or computer. You make your own schedule and work around your children. And for Paige, it really seemed like a natural fit. The whole business model revolves around hosting parties where people gather, cook food, socialize, and shop the products. Either you host the event yourself or someone hosts it for you and invites their friends over. And Paige was apparently very good at it. She would turn these parties into full dinner-style gatherings where people would come eat, socialize, and enjoy themselves, all while hearing the sales pitch for the different products being used to prepare the meal. Paige did really well with her Pampered Chef business, and she worked her way up to becoming a director in the company, which meant she wasn't just selling products anymore, she was also recruiting new consultants, mentoring them, and helping guide them as they started their own business. And one thing these MLM companies often do is reward their top sellers with bonuses and incentive trips. Well, Paige had become one of the top consultants in the company and had actually earned herself and her three children a trip to the Caribbean. But apparently, even all of that still wasn't enough for Paige, because she also had another side business selling baby slings for nursing mothers. Life seemed to finally be falling back into place for Paige, and she was proving not only to herself, but honestly probably to everyone around her, that she didn't need Rob Dixon to support her or the children. She was making it happen completely on her own through different side hustles and businesses. But despite all of that success, there were still signs that something was weighing heavily on her mind. In 2007, while attending a pool party, Paige was casually talking with one of her friends when she suddenly admitted that she feared for her safety. Her friend immediately just assumed that Paige was talking about Rob and the possibility that he could return and harm her because of their history together. So she just tried to reassure Paige, reminding her that Rob is all the way in Philadelphia. He's not going to come back. He's not going to hurt her. Everything is going to be okay. But apparently, Paige's fears weren't just shared privately with friends. According to reports, Paige also expressed concerns on an online message board used by fellow Pampered Chef consultants, where they would typically share marketing ideas and business advice and strategies. And it was on that forum Paige stated that she was worried her ex-husband would come back and harm her. Then, just 4 days later, on June 26, 2007, Paige attended a mom's group gathering in Grand Junction. The women in this group regularly met up to get out of the house, relax, and focus on something other than just motherhood and daily stress. There were around 20 women in this group, and they all knew each other very well. But during this particular outing, multiple women noticed that Paige didn't seem like herself. Normally, Paige was bubbly, outgoing, and cheerful, but that night she seemed distracted, almost depressed, like something heavy was weighing on her mind. And the friend Paige had confided in at the pool party was there that evening too. Seeing Paige act so differently made her wonder if maybe Paige truly was deeply afraid of Rob returning. Then a couple of days later, on June 28th, Paige spoke on the phone with her friend Andrea, who also was part of that mom's group. Andrea later said that Paige still seemed like she had something on her mind, but compared to the dinner outing, she sounded much more like her normal bubbly self again. And according to Andrea, Paige was especially excited about one thing in particular. She had plans to meet up with her first husband, Ron Biegler. Paige reportedly admitted that she still had feelings for Ron and felt like the two reconnecting again was almost destiny. The plan was for the two of them to meet halfway between Grand Junction and Denver in a place called Eagle, Colorado, which that's about a two-hour drive from Grand Junction. The two met up at a riverside park in Eagle, where they spent time catching up on all of the years that had passed since their divorce. They shared a picnic, talked for hours, and by all accounts, the meeting went really well. Afterward, the two said goodbye and Paige headed back toward Grand Junction while Ron Biegler returned home to Denver. At some point later that evening, Paige called Ron just to make sure that he had gotten home safely, and the two of them had chatted for just a few more minutes before getting off the phone. But after that conversation, Paige seemingly vanished. She never made it home. That evening, Paige's children and their nanny began trying to call her, but every call went straight to voicemail. And according to the nanny, that was immediately alarming because Paige was always available for her children. This wasn't normal behavior for her at all. So panic began setting in very quickly, and they ultimately went down to the police station to file a missing persons report. Then, 2 days later, Ron also contacted authorities to report Paige missing after he hadn't been able to reach her either and learned that the children couldn't get a hold of her. And during that call, Ron reportedly made it very clear that something was wrong, stating that Paige would never willingly leave her children behind. When Paige's father learned that his daughter was missing, he immediately jumped into his car and drove from Denver to Grand Junction because he knew in his gut that this was not like Paige. Once he arrived, he joined in searching the home, the property, and surrounding areas. Then, around 9:30 that night, investigators even brought in a bloodhound to search for any possible trail leading away from the home. But then, things took an even more disturbing turn. On the night of Sunday, July 1st, 2007, a woman called 911 after spotting a car engulfed in flames near the corner of 23rd and Logos in Grand Junction. When police and fire crews arrived on scene, they discovered that the burning vehicle was Paige's red Ford Focus. The car was located in a parking lot just 2 miles from her home. Much of the vehicle had been destroyed by the fire, but investigators quickly determined that the blaze had been intentionally set. This was arson. And as detectives began processing the car, they noticed something strange. The driver's seat had been pushed all the way back. That immediately stood out because Paige was only 5'4", and investigators believed that there was no way that she could have comfortably driven the car with the seat positioned that far away from the pedals. The investigators found something almost unbelievable considering the condition of the car. Inside the trunk, Paige's daily planner had somehow survived the fire. But when detectives opened it, they discovered that 4 days' worth of pages had been torn out. Investigators believed whoever was responsible for Paige's disappearance may have intentionally removed those pages because whatever was written on them could have been incriminating. At that point, it became painfully obvious that this was not simply a case of a mother voluntarily disappearing. Something terrible had happened to Paige, and investigators knew they needed to find her quickly. Since Ron was the last known person to see and speak with Paige, he immediately rose to the top of the list of persons of interest. But after investigators obtained his cell phone records, Ron was fairly quickly ruled out. The records reportedly tracked his movements from the time he left Paige all the way back to Denver, placing him more than 4 hours away from Grand Junction when Paige disappeared. After speaking with the people closest to Paige and reviewing the conversation she had leading up to her disappearance, investigators quickly learned that Paige had expressed fear about her ex-husband, Rob Dixon. But despite those concerns, Rob was quickly ruled out. Authorities confirmed that he was still living in Philadelphia at the time and nowhere near Colorado when Paige vanished. So now investigators were left in a really difficult position. Both of Paige's ex-husbands had solid alibis, leaving detectives scrambling to figure out who would want to hurt or abduct her. Meanwhile, search efforts for Paige intensified dramatically. More than 200 volunteers reportedly came out to search the fields south of Grand Junction, looking for absolutely anything connected to Paige. And throughout all of this, Paige's father, Frank, refused to give up. He was desperate to search every possible place he could think of. Then, 24 days after Paige disappeared, Frank brought his search efforts to the Colorado River. In a heartbreaking news clip featured during the 2020 special, Frank openly talked about not knowing when you're supposed to finally accept that your child is gone. How do you know when to stop searching? How do you know when they aren't coming back? And honestly, as a parent myself, I cannot even begin to imagine that kind of pain. The constant wondering where your child is, if they're scared, if they're hurt, if they're still alive. And I think as a parent, there would always be the guilt of wondering if you were doing enough. Am I searching hard enough? Did I overlook something? Should I keep going one more day? I honestly think the guilt alone would probably keep me searching forever. But despite all of these massive search efforts, there was still absolutely no sign of Paige and no clear indication of what had happened to her. This is until a random roadside stop changed everything. One day, a motorist traveling along US Route 50 pulled over with a flat tire roughly 15 miles away from where Paige's burned car had been discovered. And while changing the tire, the man noticed something laying in the grass nearby. It was Paige's checkbook. Once investigators were notified, they immediately responded to search the surrounding area for anything else connected to Paige. And during that search, detectives recovered additional personal belongings, including business cards and other miscellaneous items scattered along the roadside. But among those items was something investigators immediately recognized as extremely important. One of the business cards was for a company called Models Incorporated. And investigators soon learned that this was actually a business operated by Paige herself under the alias Carrie. But what shocked her family the most was discovering what the business actually was. Models Incorporated was reportedly an escort service. According to investigators, Paige was allegedly meeting clients either at their homes, in hotels, or sometimes at an office location she used. And what made this even more surprising was the fact that the same office space Paige used during the day for her Pampered Chef business was allegedly being used at night for the escort services. And apparently, only a very small handful of people knew this side of Paige's life existed. One of those people was a friend of hers named Carol. When investigators interviewed Carol, she admitted that she knew about the escort business and even recalled one occasion where Paige became extremely frightened after an encounter with a client. According to Carol, one evening Paige had received a call to meet with someone at her office. Now, this part of the story gets a little confusing because sources aren't entirely clear on exactly what happened during this meeting or whether Paige actually performed services for this individual she was supposed to meet there, or whether the client Paige was supposed to meet that night actually showed up or not. But according to her friend Carol, Paige eventually locked up the office and headed out to her car. And that's when she noticed a white pickup truck pulling into the parking lot. Now, this immediately made Paige uncomfortable. It was late at night, nobody else had been around, and she didn't recognize the truck. So according to Carol, Paige hurried to her car as quickly as she possibly could and locked herself inside. Then after she got into her car, the truck circled back out of the parking lot and sped away. But whatever happened during that moment clearly shook Paige deeply. Because according to those close to her, she was extremely rattled afterward and truly felt in her gut that the situation had been dangerous. Friends who knew about Paige's business later explained that the services offered through Models Incorporated included things like nude massages, exotic dancing, and private entertainment for parties such as bachelor parties. And according to those familiar with the business, clients could pay more for more revealing services, though multiple people close to Paige maintained that there was no sex work involved. What also surprised investigators was learning that Ron Beigler apparently knew about the business as well. When detectives questioned Ron about Models Incorporated, he admitted that he had known about it and didn't seem particularly bothered by it. In an interview, Ron stated that the average appointment cost around $450 and insisted that Paige did not engage in sexual acts with clients. As investigators dug deeper, they discovered that Paige had also placed ads in the local newspaper under the alias Carrie, advertising her services. They also found that she maintained a profile on a website called Naughty Nightlife, where she posted photos of herself along with descriptions of her appearance and the services she offered. According to reports, the profile advertised escort services, erotic massages, private dances, group events, and parties for men, women, and couples. And understandably, all of this came as a massive shock to Paige's family. But despite the surprise, many of them ultimately came to view it as Paige simply doing whatever she could to financially support her children and keep a roof over their heads. The home Paige and Rob Dixon had purchased together was worth around $1 million, and at one point the mortgage alone was said to be roughly $6,000 a month. After the divorce, Paige kept the home, and by all accounts, she was determined to maintain stability for her children and preserve the life that they had always known. And honestly, I really want to pause here for just a second because I think this is important. No matter what someone does for work, whether they struggle with addiction, work in the sex industry, or have parts of their life others may judge, that does not make them any less deserving of empathy, justice, or being found. It does not mean they deserved whatever happened to them. And unfortunately, one thing I've noticed over the years covering cases like this is that the moment people learn a victim had quote unquote dark secrets or lived outside of what society considers acceptable, public sympathy often disappears. Families end up fighting not only for answers, but also against this horrible mindset that somehow their loved one put themselves in that position. And sadly, that's exactly what happened here. Once the media learned about Paige's secret escort business, headlines everywhere suddenly shifted to focusing on the fact that this missing mother was an escort. And almost overnight, many people in the local community seemed to lose interest in the case entirely. But thankfully, while public attention may have faded, investigators were only becoming more determined to solve Paige's disappearance. Detectives discovered that on the night that Paige vanished, she had received more than a dozen calls from different men seeking her services. So investigators began painstakingly working through the list of callers and known clients connected to Paige. And during that process, they brought in a 55-year-old man named Lester Jones for questioning. Lester was a married RV repair mechanic, and investigators quickly realized something that immediately caught their attention. The shop where Lester worked was located directly across the street from the parking lot where Paige's burned car had been found. And on top of that, Lester had an extensive criminal history. During questioning, Lester admitted that he had previously hired Paige for an erotic massage appointment where she had been nude. According to Lester, although he had hired Paige for services before, the two never had sex because Paige had made it clear to him that she did not offer that to clients. But investigators soon learned that Lester had been calling Paige in the days leading up to her disappearance. And according to Paige's friend Carol, Lester had even scheduled another appointment with Paige the day before she vanished. The problem was, by that point, Paige had started feeling uneasy about Lester. She feared he may have discovered her true identity and knew who she actually was outside of this escort business. So instead of going to meet Lester herself, Paige sent Carol in her place. Carol later told investigators that when she arrived, Lester immediately told her that he wanted sex. She explained to him that if that was what he was looking for, he needed to contact a different escort service because that was not something she was there to provide. Eventually, Lester agreed to a different service, and according to Carol, the two mostly sat there and just talked. But what really stood out to her was that Lester seemed oddly fixated on Paige. Carol said Lester kept bringing Paige up during the appointment and even told her that he knew Paige was the ex-wife of Rob Dixon. So naturally, investigators asked Lester directly if he knew Paige had once been married to Rob Dixon, and Lester admitted that he had recognized her almost immediately. At first, Lester appeared extremely cooperative with investigators. He allowed detectives to question him for more than 2 hours without an attorney present. He gave his fingerprints, DNA samples, and even handed over the keys to his truck voluntarily. But then investigators asked him what kind of vehicle he drove, and Lester answered that he drove a white Dodge pickup truck. The moment detectives heard that, alarm bells immediately started going off in their heads because Paige had previously told Carol about being frightened by a mysterious white pickup truck outside of her office late one night. Could Lester's truck have been the same one Paige saw? Then investigators uncovered something else that made Lester look even more suspicious. While reviewing phone records, detectives found a mystery phone number that had called Paige 5 separate times on the day she disappeared. That number was traced back to a disposable track phone. When investigators asked Lester whether he had purchased a track phone to communicate with Paige, he completely denied ever owning one. But despite his cooperation, detectives felt like something wasn't adding up. So they obtained warrants to search both Lester's home and the RV repair shop where he had worked in Grand Junction. During those searches, investigators found Viagra, condoms, a black Victoria's Secret bra, and under Lester's desk at work, they discovered a gasoline can. And according to other employees at the repair shop, there was absolutely no legitimate reason for Lester to have a gas can there. They said it was unusual and completely out of place. But perhaps the most damaging discovery came from the trash. Investigators found packaging for a track phone. Detectives were then able to trace where the phone had been purchased and eventually connected it to a local Walmart. When they reviewed surveillance footage from the store, investigators believed the video showed Lester purchasing the phone. But even after detectives confronted him and told him they had surveillance footage, he still completely denied buying the phone at all. At that point, investigators truly believed they had found their guy, but they still needed stronger evidence. So detectives brought in specially trained cadaver dogs to examine Paige's burned vehicle. And during the search, one of the dogs alerted to the scent of human decomposition in either the back seat or the trunk area of the car. Investigators then gave the dog Lester Jones's scent to determine whether it could identify his presence inside the car. And according to reports, the dog alerted to the driver's seat. Now remember, investigators had already noted that the driver's seat had been pushed completely back, positioned for someone much taller than Paige to drive the car. And Lester Jones was 6'4". But despite all of the suspicious evidence piling up, former District Attorney Pete Hautzinger was hesitant to file charges without Paige's body because so much of the case remained circumstantial. So unfortunately, the investigation slowly went cold while Paige's loved ones continued hoping and praying that someday she would finally be found. And heartbreakingly, that day finally came in March of 2012. A hiker exploring an area not far from where Paige's belongings had previously been discovered stumbled across human remains lying down inside a gulch near a dry stream bed. After 5 long years exposed to the elements, all that remained were bones. Unfortunately, because so much time had passed and only skeletal remains were recovered, investigators were unable to officially determine the exact cause of death for Paige Bergfeld. But there was one horrifying detail that strongly suggested whatever happened to Paige had been incredibly violent. Wrapped around her skull was duct tape, and investigators also noted that her jawbone had been fractured. Based on those findings, authorities believed Paige had likely been beaten to death. And once dental records officially confirmed the remains belonged to her, investigators finally moved forward with arresting Lester Jones for kidnapping and murder. Lester's trial didn't begin until July of 2016, nearly an entire decade after Paige first disappeared. And prosecutors knew that this was not going to be an easy case to win. A lot of the evidence against Lester was circumstantial, but prosecutors hoped that when the jury looked at everything together, they would realize the pieces all pointed back to one man. The prosecution's theory was that sometime after 8:57 p.m. on June 28, 2007, after the final phone call made from Paige's phone, Lester kidnapped and murdered her. Prosecutors believed that he then disposed of her body in the remote gulch where her remains were eventually found before taking her car to the parking lot near his workplace and intentionally setting it on fire. During the trial, prosecutors even called Lester's ex-wife to testify about his violent past. She described incidents where Lester had physically abused her and even kidnapped her at gunpoint while threatening to kill her. She eventually escaped, and Lester served 5 years in prison related to that attack. Meanwhile, the defense tried very hard to introduce other possible suspects and create reasonable doubt. Several different men testified about contacting Models Incorporated for services around the time that Paige disappeared. One man even claimed that he had been waiting at Motel 6 for someone from the service to arrive the night Paige vanished, but nobody ever showed up. The defense also brought forward multiple men who admitted they had paid Paige for sex, attempting to paint a picture that there were many dangerous people who could have potentially harmed her. But as testimony continued, many of these individuals were ultimately ruled out through alibis and phone records. Then came what the defense clearly hoped would be their bombshell alternate suspect, a man named George. George had an extensive criminal history, including theft, burglary, DUI charges, and even kidnapping. And according to phone records, George had called Paige in the hours before she disappeared, nearly 20 times. Allegedly, he was trying to arrange an erotic massage appointment. A woman named Megan Williams also testified during the trial. She was friends with George and stated that 2 days after Paige disappeared, George had been acting frantic and suddenly claimed that he needed to leave town because his family had supposedly died in a car crash. Except according to Megan, that story was completely fabricated. Megan testified that she personally believed George was responsible for Paige's kidnapping and murder. However, George himself was never able to testify because he drowned in 2011. And investigators maintain that despite his suspicious behavior, they had thoroughly investigated him and ultimately ruled him out. But honestly, one of the most disturbing pieces of evidence against Lester Jones came after investigators first questioned him. Just 2 days after his initial police interview, Lester attempted suicide by overdosing on sleeping pills. Then, not long after, investigators contacted Lester to tell him that he could come retrieve his truck because they were finished searching it. But during that phone call, detectives said Lester sounded groggy, confused, and almost incoherent. And then he made a bizarre statement that completely stunned the investigators on the line. According to testimony, Lester said, quote, "You asked me where I should bury a body," end quote. The investigator was shocked because no such question had ever been asked. And many people believe this statement may have been an accidental slip or a partial confession connected to what happened to Paige. Eventually, after weeks of testimony, the jury went into deliberations, but they were unable to reach a unanimous verdict. And because of that, the judge declared a mistrial. Prosecutors, however, refused to give up. Later that same year, in November of 2016, Lester Jones was retried for Paige's murder. This time, the outcome was different. The second jury found Lester Jones guilty of first-degree murder, and he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Today, Lester, now over 70 years old, is serving his sentence at Fremont Correctional Facility. And while Paige's family was finally able to get some degree of answers and closure, the loss of Paige is something they will never truly recover from. The location where her body was found has since become a small memorial in her honor, but no memorial can erase the grief that is left behind. Her parents had to bury their only daughter. Her brother lost his sister. And honestly, I think the hardest part in all of this is the fact that Paige's children were forced to grow up without their mother, a mother who, by all accounts, truly did everything she possibly could to provide for them and give them the best life she was able to. Whether people agreed with how Paige chose to make money or not, at the end of the day, she was still a human being. She was still someone's daughter, someone's sister, and most importantly, someone's mother. And nothing about the work that she did made her deserving of what happened to her. Paige was described as beautiful, caring, hardworking, and incredibly devoted to her children. And unfortunately, because of the stigma surrounding the escort industry, many people seem to stop seeing her as a victim once details about her secret life came out. But the reality is, no matter what someone does for a living, they still deserve safety. They still deserve empathy, and they still deserve justice. And thankfully, despite all of the obstacles in this case, Paige's family was eventually able to get answers and see the man responsible held accountable for taking her life. Crimesters, that is all that I have for this week's episode. Make sure you're a part of my private Facebook group. You can find it by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. In there, I share all pictures and information pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also encourage all members to share all things true crime. Find me on Instagram at Crimeaholly if you would like to keep up with my crazy, busy, hectic life. Things have just been absolutely insane in my neck of the woods recently, and I'm really hoping that once school is out this coming week, I can kind of slow down and take a breath with all of the craziness, but no promises there, I know. I just want to say I love and appreciate you all so much, and I will see you next time. Always remember to be aware and take care. And if you are going to be at CrimeCon, make sure you find me. I am going to have exclusive swag to give out to everybody that comes up and meets me. Introduce yourself. I am so excited. I cannot wait to see some of you guys and officially meet you in person. So make sure you say hi if you see me wandering around. All right, guys. Love you. Bye.